Six music.
BBC Radio. Six music documentaries.
My new CD, Sham On. I got shit running through my brain, so intense that I can't explain. All alone in my white boy pain, shake your booty while the band complains. Rockin' the suburbs, it's just like Michael Jackson did. I'm rockin' the suburbs, you said that he was talented. I'm rockin' the suburbs, I take the checks and face the facts. The sub producer with computers fixes all my shitty tracks.
Welcome to the first time here on Six Music with me, Matt Everett. This is the series where we meet some of the most influential and best-loved musicians around and look at the seminal first musical moments that shaped their lives and their careers. My guest this week has always been an unlikely alternative rock hero. His studious, slightly bookish image was certainly at odds with the other bands around when he formed the piano, bass and drums trio in 1993. More to the point, there weren't that many indie piano, bass and drum trios around at the time. And if they were, they didn't rock as hard as Ben Folds 5. And my guest this week on the first time is their vocalist and pianist, Mr. Ben Folds. From the off, the band was always different, and that's what made them great. They married the piano dynamics and melodies of early Elton John and Randy Newman with sharp, smart lyrics that focused on American life and Ben's own personal history. Here, Ben talks through his formative musical heroes, the early days of Ben Folds 5, their breakthrough single Underground, and their first hit song Brick. He also discusses his work collaborating with author Nick Hornby, splitting, then reuniting Ben Folds, and what it's like recording an album with William Shatner. But I started by asking, as I do with all my guests on the first time, when was the first time he was aware of music?
I don't remember being not aware of it. As far as I can remember back, I'm one of those people I can remember my second birthday, and I was given a little plastic banjo, which I was playing left-handed. I remember that. I remember sitting on the floor for hours and hours and hours at a time at that time. The reason I know how old I was is because my family moved about once a year, so I can remember the house and I can describe the house. And I remember sitting on the floor listening to 45s, everything from... I didn't like the Elvis records. In fact, I broke them.
Really?
I liked the Little Richard records. I mean, I didn't mean anything by it. I was only a few years old. But yeah, that's my first memories of it, is listening to a lot of music and it was always part of my life. My parents weren't particularly musical, but I just enjoyed it.
If your parents weren't musical, was there a lot of music in your household growing up? Did they play records and stuff?
Well, you know, fortunately, you know, our generation, you know, if your parents are going to stick you in front of the stump thing to get you out of their face, which is what we do as parents. Now you can put them in front of a video game, a computer, iPhone, whatever. And at the time, there wasn't a television in the house. It was all about the little record player, which was just a little portable phonograph and a bunch of records that were probably purchased at a yard sale or something. Yeah, they kept me occupied with that.
What kind of stuff do you remember listening to?
A lot of Little Richard.
Yeah.
I remember a record of I'm a Little Teapot, Short and Stout.
Big Tune.
Yeah, it's a good one. That's a classic. Peter, Paul, and Mary's Puff the Magic Dragon.
Puff the Magic Dragon lived by the sea. Autumn mist in a land called Honolulu. Little Jackie Paper loved that rascal Puff and brought him strings and sealing wax and other fancy stuff. Oh, Puff the Magic Dragon lived by the sea and frolicked in the autumn mist in a land called Honolulu. The Magic Dragon lived by the sea and frolicked in the autumn mist in a land called Honolulu. Together they were...
I would recognize them by the color of the label, of course, because I don't remember that I couldn't read so much as I just remember being really focused on the colors of the labels, you know. It's like, this is, and I would put them in order and listen to them all day long. I listened to them all the time. We had some 78s too. I was aware that you changed it to 78 RPM, and you know, it's old stuff. I mean, it's old technology now.
What was the first record that you bought yourself that was yours?
Well, I was given a dollar to buy a record when I was maybe 9 or 10 years old, and that was a really bad decision I made to buy a record called Disco Duck.
Yeah, I know that record. That's not a seminal piece of work.
No, it's not, but we both know it, sadly.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's cool. It's the guy was imitating Donald Duck, and he was doing you know, his duck voice over disco music in about 1975, so that was...
Moving my feet to the disco beat. How in the world could I keep my seat? All of a sudden I begin to change. I was on the dance floor acting strange. Flapping my arms.
Disco, disco, duck, 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 duck
I was, and then I bought my next record I purchased that I was aware of a few years later was Peter Frampton, Frampton Comes Alive.
Now that is a classic record.
That is a classic record.
When did you start to sort of equate the music that you kind of hear with, like, well, I'd like to do that. I'd like to make that noise.
Yeah, I don't know. I knew deep down that's what I was supposed to do. And I would often daydream about how it would work. And I played, you know, I was playing piano by the time I was this age that we're talking about. But I think, you know, where I come from, that's just not something you do for a living. So it didn't occur to me I would be a official musician, you know, and I would cover for it well. What are you going to be when you grow up? I'm going to be, you know, something else, a mathematician or something like that. I did well in math, so I said I was going to be. What does a mathematician do anyway? It's just sitting, probably an accountant. Well, I'm going to be an accountant.
What about the first gig? That's always like the first gig that you saw. That's often a kind of has a big impression on.
You know what's really cool about that is the first gig that I think the first gig I ever saw was Dr. Hook.
That's a good gig.
And my tour manager now, he was the tour manager for Dr. Hook at that era. So I was like 10 years old watching this.
I don't believe it. Don't touch me. Hey, Ray. Hey, Sugar. Tell them who we are.
Well, we're big rock singers, we got golden fingers, and we're loved everywhere we go.
That sounds like us.
We sing about beauty and we sing about truth at $10,000 a show.
Right.
We take all kind of pills to give us all kind of thrills, but the thrill we never know is the thrill that'll get you when you get your picture on the cover of the Rolling Stone.
Rolling Stone.
Wanna see my picture on the cover?
Stone.
Wanna buy 5 copies for my mother?
Yeah.
Wanna see my smiling face on the cover of the Rolling Stone?
That's a very, very good idea.
I got a freaky old lady named a Cocaine Kitty who embroiders on my jeans. I got my poor old gray-haired daddy driving my limousine.
Now it's all designed to blow our minds, but our minds won't really be blown like the blow that'll get you when you get your picture on the cover of the Rolling Stone.
Rolling Stone.
Wanna see our pictures on the cover?
Stone.
Wanna buy 5 copies for our mother?
Yeah.
Wanna see my smiling face on the cover of the Rolling Stone?
Teenage blue-eyed groupies would do anything we say.
We got a genuine Indian guru, he's teaching us a better way.
We got all the friends that money can buy, so we never have to be alone.
And we keep getting richer, but we can't get our picture on the cover of the Rolling Stone.
Uh-huh. Rolling Stone.
Wanna see my picture on the cover?
Stone.
Wanna buy 5 copies for my mother?
Stone.
Wanna see my smiling face on the cover of the Rolling Stone? On the cover of the Rolling
Stone.
Wanna see my picture on the cover?
When you kind of hit your sort of teens and started to become more kind of aware of music that was maybe of your era, because you were into punk, weren't you? Is that right?
I liked what it was that I thought that the other kids weren't listening to, or what would...
Weren't listening to,
that might be slightly eccentric. You know, and I had friends that went to boarding school up north, and they would come back in the summer with all these crazy records.
Like what?
And sometimes it wouldn't be punk rock. Sometimes it would just be like Talking Heads or Laurie Anderson or something that was, I would consider, slightly eccentric. Anything that I could play and say, yeah, I'm weird, what about you? And because really what was being played on the radio, and it was really well done stuff, is like, you know, my neck of the woods would be Journey, REO, Speedwagon, stuff like that. And I don't know why I wasn't interested in it. I wasn't too good for it. It wasn't speaking to me. That wasn't my language, you know. That just wasn't it for me.
Who did speak to you?
Well, I loved the Talking Heads and the Clash and Elvis Costello. I mean, this was, you know, at a school with maybe 700 kids at it, the 5 of us that listened to that, you know, it was
the weirdos.
It was a haven, yeah. And the thing is, I didn't look weird. The other people that listened to it were obviously into the t-shirts, the mohawk, the haircut, everything. But I wasn't. I looked pretty much like I do now. I never wanted to express that way, but I loved the music and what it meant.
We'll be right back.
me a little bit about the kind of pianists that you fell in love with in terms of those influences, because obviously people always name check the kind of obvious people, Elton John and Billy Joel, but who are the people that you kind of remember listening to for their keyboard skills and going, that's beautiful, I kind of like what they're doing?
Honestly, I never paid attention to piano players, and I think because I didn't play other people's music, I only kind of played on the piano what I had in my head, what I was making up.
Okay.
That it was a real frustrating ride for me. I wouldn't say that that was a good way to learn, actually.
I can't get it out of my head, but I know what I want it to sound like.
Exactly. I would just try to do it. I think that comes with, I mean, I'm a pretty good piano player, so I'm not saying I did things completely the wrong way, but I think it's just a really frustrating, you know, beat your head against the wall way to do it, to just start to play and be so upset when it's not like what you think it should sound like. I mean, I think Elton John was definitely, I mean, he was the man, not just the king of pop. He was the piano player, and there were certain songs, although not many, that actually featured the piano in his music. You know, if you listen carefully, some of them sort of featured the band, and he was actually pretty out of the way most of the time. There was a record called 11-17-70, which is just the three-piece live. That very much informed what I wanted to do later on. And I think we have taken that to another level. Those records sound more bluesy, more rootsy. Mm. You know, Robert's playing with a fuzz bass. We play large places that way. This is not a default, you know, just playing on the radio measure like what they were doing. And so I think that that was a good influence, and it was also something that I felt proud of taking sort of to another step.
You tell me there's an angel in your tree. Did he say he'd come to call on me for things I can't?
Didn't listen to, you know, later on, like in by the time I got to college, Glenn Gould was blowing my mind, Oscar Peterson was blowing my mind, Keith Jarrett, Chick Corea, Tommy Flanagan as a, you know, piano player back in the early days of jazz, or early-ish days of jazz, is just a beautiful, lyrical, amazing piano player. And there's so many of them. You know, Herbie Hancock definitely did a lot for my playing, just because that's a way of thinking about voicing that, you know, you have a power chord with a guitar, and it's just two notes and wattage, and it just blows people's minds. Well, you don't do that on the piano. The piano power chords are really about the voicings. And so my unfair advantage is to play, you know, play a Herbie voicing or play something that's jazzy, and suddenly everyone's like, wow, that's piano.
Thank you.
That was Herbie Hancock with the track Maiden Voyage, the first song to be taken from his 1965 album of the same name, and the choice of my guest here on the first time, Mr. Ben Folds.
This is Six Music.
This is BBC Radio Six Music.
We can't be happy underground. Who's got the looks? Who's got the brains? Who's got everything? I got this pain in my heart, that's all. Hey you, with the lonely, lonely face. There's gotta be something else. Let me tell you something else. There was a girl that passed me by. She gave a smile, but I was shy.
I'm Matt Everett, and you're listening to The First Time here on Six Music, the show where we look at the key first seminal moments in an artist's career. And my guest this week is Mr. Ben Folds, and that was from Ben Folds 5's first album in 1995, Underground.
Tell me about that first Ben Folds 5 hit, your first hit, Underground, because, you know, some people see it as, like, it's quite an arch song about the alternative music cool scene, and other people say, actually, it's quite affectionate kind of look at that scene. Yeah. And I was never quite sure whether it's either or whether it's kind of both.
Well, I think that subject has to be both, because everyone wants to feel like they're somewhat in a crowd. Mm-hmm. They want to feel like, you know, and I think the word alternative has always been really funny, because it implies a way of life that's also something you get a membership card for. I mean, it feels that way, you know. And it's also, you know, anyone who feels like they're on the unbeaten path also feels left out. So I think it's just that everyone wants to kind of be part of something. And I just thought it was funny to use real kind of Broadway chords, beachy background vocals, and sing sort of about where people my age's head was at, which is about belonging. It pressed all the right buttons for me. And more importantly, it's just kind of a fun song. I mean, it's like you don't play that song and don't see people smiling about it. So I think we all feel like we're not really in the crowd. More people feel like outsiders. And for that reason, I think that the approach of our band and Weezer and a lot of bands that came along at the same time was effective in that for the first time in kind of rock and roll music, it wasn't necessarily playing to the coolest crowd. It was actually playing to the people who didn't feel cool. Well, actually, even the quote cool people don't feel cool. No one feels cool. Everyone feels like they don't fit in. And so to make that a very long answer, it's an empathetic look at it. It's not like a total piss take.
Six Music.
I have to ask you about Brick, because it's kind of one of those key songs for you. I don't want to talk about the lyrics per se, because they're there.
It's
straightforward.
Yeah.
But did you find it strange that a song with that lyrical content kind of became the one that put you in the mainstream? Because you'd not only been going with Ben Folds, but you've been playing with loads of other bands as a musician for a very long time. And it's kind of like, that's out of all the ones you could have chosen to thrust me under the spotlight, that's a strange choice of song, as beautiful as it is.
Yeah, I feel really lucky in retrospect that that was the one, because I think there's something so absolutely honest and dignified about that, from the presentation to the lyrics to everything. Mm. It was recorded in a bedroom. All the instruments, the three instruments, were played together just on a few tracks, you know, upright piano. And I think, you know, it's a lot nicer to have that be the song that was immortalized rather than something that, for instance, requires a lot of volume or requires some kind of trick. At the time, we really did define ourselves as the piano band that rocks, and we were a little bit bratty, and that song did not encompass any of what we thought we were.
I love that band. No, we're not like that normally.
I know. It was our calling card, and yet it was so unlike what we were doing. But when I look back on it, it was really almost the most honest thing that we did. And think about all the bands that like do one track that's different, but it's just somehow they were really either a producer or someone was trying to shove them into a hole, and the reason that they're uncomfortable with it is because it's not them. Mm. It's like, I feel sorry for, I don't know, my hero Randy Newman, that it's Short People. You know, I would rather be known for my most poignant song rather than one that people think is a novelty, because Randy's written such amazing, sad songs and really honest pieces of music. I'm not saying Short People's not amazing, because it is, but you know what I'm saying.
Six AM, day after Christmas, I throw some clothes on in the dark. The smell of cold, car seat is freezing, the world is sleeping, I am numb. Up the stairs some gifts. of lime. Driving back to her apartment, for the moment we're alone. Yeah, she's alone, and I'm alone. Now I know it. She's a breaking up, drowning slowly off the coast, and I'm headed nowhere. She's a breaking up.
Another first I have to ask you about is first meeting William Shatner. I mean, what are your first impressions of meeting? Because you've worked with him as a producer, you've worked alongside him, you've kind of had a bit of a connection there with him.
Yeah.
What's that first meeting like? Because he's a bit of a legend.
Yeah, well, he's he's one of my good friends, and we've known each other now for, what, 12 years or something.
Mm.
And when I first met him, it is that way. You probably find this about celebrity types, especially the ones in his category, because he's, Captain Kirk. I mean, if you grow up with that, you can't erase that.
Yeah, it
is what it is. You can't unsee that. And so, sometimes you're really nervous, and when you meet them, it's like, oh my God, it's this person, and sometimes not. With Bill, we were just buds right off the bat. And in fact, so a guy was with him who took me kind of the side and was whispering to me, he does not take that kind of direction well. I'm surprised he hasn't cracked yet, because I was being very specific,
right,
very frank with him. And he and I just got along that way. I worked with him on a commercial one time and watched him eat a director alive. And I knew then what his friend was trying to tell me, which is like, that's unusual, but that we've always been able to do that. Vice versa. It's just like, some of your friends are just people you can just be really honest with. And he's so much older than I am, I just defer so much in life, and in general, he's sort of been a little bit of a mentor for me. He's a great guy.
She came from Greece. She had a thirst for knowledge. She studied sculpture at St. Martin's College. That's where I caught her eye. She told me that her dad was loaded. I said, in that case, I'll have a rum and Coca-Cola. She said, fine. And in 30 seconds' time, she said, I want to live like common people. I want to do whatever common people do. I want to sleep with common people. I want to sleep with common people like you. Well, what else could I do? I said, I'll see what I can do. I took her to a supermarket. I don't know why, but I had to start it somewhere. So it started there. I said, pretend you've got no money. She just laughed and said, oh, you're so funny. I said, yeah? Well, I can't see anyone else smiling in here.
Are you sure?
You want to live like common people? You want to see whatever common people see? You want to sleep with common people? You want to sleep with common people like me? But she didn't understand.
She just smiled and held my hand. Supplies a barber shop. Cut your hair and get a job. Smoke some fags and play some pool. Pretend you never went to school. But still you'll never get it right. When you're lying in bed at night, watching roaches climb the wall. If you called your dad, he could stop it all here.
You'll never live like common people. You'll never do whatever common people do. You'll never fail like common people. You'll never watch your life slide out of you and dance and drink and screw. Cause there's nothing else to do.
Because there's nothing else to do. Like a dog lying in a corner, they'll bite you and never warn you. Look out.
They'll tear your insides out. Cause everybody hates a tourist.
Cause everybody hates a tourist. Especially one who thinks it's all such a lie.
Yeah, and the chip stains grease will come out in the bath.
You will never understand how it feels to live your life,
without meaning
or control.
And with nowhere left to go. You're amazed that they exist. And they burn
climbed the wall. If you called your dad, he could stop it all, yeah. You'll never live like common people.
You'll never do.
You'll never do what common people do.
You'll never
fail like common people.
You'll never
watch your life slide out of you.
Nick Hornby provided the lyrics to Lonely Avenue. How did you first meet him? Because that it's a really interesting record, and I think it seemed to take you, pair of you off in directions you never normally would have gone in.
Yeah.
With really interesting results.
I like the results of that record. I really like that record. I mean, it wasn't meant to be a huge record, you know. I mean, it's not... It's a very pop record on one hand, but it's also very radical in another way. I mean, Nick's lyrics are lyrics of a novelist and a screenwriter, and... there's a lot of detail, and I'm approaching that record with quite a bit of craft.
Yeah, was that a kind of like ego, but transferred from different environments? I mean, you know, you know how you want your music to sound. He knows how he wants his words to look, but that could clash.
We never clashed once.
Okay, that's good.
He wrote the lyrics, passed them off to me. I wrote the music quickly. I've always thought that it looked like an amazing way to write, the way that Elton and Bernie wrote, where they just... They just separate rooms and they just knock it out, and there's something really clean about that. So we took that as, you know, an inspiration of how to do it. When you write the lyrics and the music all together yourself, you can spend quite a bit more time on it. And actually, if there's going to be an ego clash, it's going to be between your lyricist side and your music side. You know, I just would know, okay, that's got to go, or that can stay. Where if I tell myself that, then I get upset with myself. What, you don't like that lyric? I smack myself in the face.
Across a crowded bar, he was with Martha, she was with Tom. Neither of them really knew what was going on. A strange feeling of never, heartbeats becoming synchronized, staying that way forever. But most of the time, it's just near misses. Atkinson's once in a bookstore, once in a party. She came in as he was leaving. Years ago at the movies, she sat behind him. The 6:30 showing of While You Were Sleeping. He never once looked around. It's so easy from above, you can't really see it all. People who belong together, lost in the sad and small. But there's nothing to be done for them. It doesn't work that way. In the lives they lived, he married Martha, she married Tom. Just this vague notion something was wrong. An ache and absence, a phantom limb, an itch that could never be scratched. It's so easy from above, you can't really see it all. People who belong together, lost and sad and small. Doesn't work that way. Sure, we all have soulmates, but we walk past them every day. Oh, no. in that vacancy. Maybe that's how books get written. Maybe that's why songs get sung. Maybe we are the unlucky ones. It's so easy from above, you can't really see it all.
When did you first realise that the pull back to working with Ben Folds Five? Was it quite an immediate thing? Because it seemed, because there was kind of things leaking in the press and the media for quite a while before yeah. it got officially announced.
I think if you're thinking of it as gravitational pull, probably best to think of it as just as one, you know, orbital rotation, you know, like we just came back around. And it wasn't like a sudden thing. It was just like we did a lap. You know, we did a 13-year lap doing things our own ways in our separate lives. And I can only speak for me that I feel satisfied when I sit down and look at a list of the things that I accomplished artistically and otherwise over the last 13 years that I know I couldn't have done. I had to do it by myself, playing with symphony orchestras, which has been a real long-term trip, something that I spent a lot of time in. And the collaborations, William Shatner, Amanda Palmer, Regina Spektor, Sarah Bareilles, solo touring of the piano with no band, something I was always kind of afraid to do, and I did that for 3 years. So it was just, you know, I was done with the things I needed to have my independence for, and now we're back together.
It feels good?
Oh, it feels awesome, yeah. We're a good team. You know, we didn't appreciate that as much back in the day because I think we were just working too hard, you know. We didn't have anything to compare it to. We'd all been waiting tables or building cabinets or whatever we were doing, so suddenly we were successful, and I'm not sure that we really understood and appreciated what that meant, and I think we appreciate it now, so...
And the last question you get, the last thing, is we always get our guests to pick the last song. What should we finish on?
It a song be, by someone else or by...
It can be one of yours, it can be someone else's, it can be old, it can be new, it can be anything you want.
You know, why don't you play Divine Comedy's Bang Goes the Knighthood, if you've got that one.
Why that song?
I don't know, it just popped in my head. I think we were talking about Randy Newman, and I was showing Neil's music to the head of Nonesuch Records recently, and I suspected he would say this, and he said, well, this is like... Irish or English Randy Newman. Why don't I know about this guy? It's like, well, because people in the States don't know about him, and you should make that happen. So it just popped in my head. But that song I had played for him is just such a... Neil Hannon has just nailed this one. It's a beautiful song. It's creepy.
Good to speak to you. Thank you.
Good to talk to you, man.
Out of the station and through the arcade, past the antique shops of Regent's Parade, to an innocuous London address, a quick glance around and then down the wet steps. God only knows what keeps bringing me here, gambling with everything that I... ears, and bang goes the knighthood, the wife and career. You make me feel something, and feeling something beats feeling nothing at all, and nothing at all is what I feel. All the rest of the time, if someone sees, if someone hears something, I know it's coming, the fear is making me ill. But then fear is part of the thrill. Just being cruel to be kind,
This is BBC Radio 6 Music.
You're about to hear a shortened version of the Morning After Mix, a carefully curated playlist available in the BBC Sounds app. It's full of gentle songs for when you need a musical rescue or escape. To find the full version, just search Morning After in the app. But for now, enjoy the calm.